Our first question is from Terence Orslin from TSO and Associates. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good morning. Geopolitics. Kazakh elections in January and Harper's visit to China. Was there any issues with respect to the uranium business in Kazakhstan? Not that it really matters, I guess, given the political situation, but there was an election after all. But have there been any changes with respect to that? And two, was the Harper's trip, was there any issues with respect to buying or selling reactors or uranium or inviting them to work for more exploration, acquisition, anything like that, that kind of transpired? Thanks.
Well, thanks, Terry. Well, I can tell you that there has been some good progress on the Canada-Chinese nuclear cooperation agreement. As you may have heard, a protocol was signed between the two governments. That's an agreement supplementary to the nuclear cooperation agreement that will allow Canadian uranium to be shipped into China. And so that, for us, is very important. As you'll probably remember, in 2010, in June, in Ottawa, on a visit of President Hu to Canada, we signed two large agreements with the Chinese, over 50 million pounds. And so this agreement now will allow us to ship our Canadian uranium to China. So that was the positive piece. I think you mentioned Kazakhstan post-election there. We see it's business as usual. We've had some of our people over there recently. Bob was over there, and we continue to work on our projects and produce uranium. So no real changes over there.
Okay. In that agreement of June last year, what was the follow-up on that respect to what form of uranium it is, and how does it fit into a big pie chart of the picture of the Chinese want to have? Any insights on that?
Yeah, maybe I'll ask Ken Seitz to answer that. Ken, do you want to put some color around that?
Sure, Tim. Yeah, today Cameco has under contract about, I guess, a little less than 52 million, because we are making deliveries today. So about 50 million pounds under contract, and they would comprise about 70% of our 17% of our overall sales portfolio. So we're making deliveries into China. I certainly will look to do more as they grow their fleet to, we're saying, 60 to 70 gigawatts by 2021. So at those type of numbers, you can imagine that China will be consuming in the neighborhood of 30 to 35 million pounds a year. So certainly more contracting to be done in that part of the world.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next question is from John Hughes of Desjardins Securities. Please go ahead.
Thanks, operator. Just sort of a follow-up on the China theme. With the announcement, I guess, of today, and you do note you have that 50 million pounds over 15 years that you secured 2 years ago. Does this open up, the decision today, open up for additional contracts above that, or does this just provide you with the opportunity, you know, to meet the contracts that are already in place?
Yeah, John, I think the opportunity to do further contracting was open with the Chinese, and we talk to them on a very regular basis. What this agreement, this protocol does today is allow us to ship our Canadian-produced uranium directly into China. So that was the big piece for us today.
Okay, so it opens up both, I guess, in terms of physically moving as well as potential additional contract. Last question, just on the fourth quarter sales volume of 13.8 million pounds versus production of 6.6. So that differential of 7.2 million pounds that's in sales, how much was produced versus purchased material?
Ken, do you want to answer that question?
Sure. We didn't do any purchasing in the spot market in the last quarter of the year. So of the 14 million pounds, you can just really look at our quarterly production number. And the balance would be purchases under normal course, the biggest one being the HEU agreement. But no purchases in the spot market in that quarter.
Okay. So does that mean that the sales volume was principally produced material?
That's right. It would be principally produced material.
Good stuff. Thank you. That helps a lot.
Thanks, Sean.
Thank you. Our next question is from Aline Ledak of Desjardins Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, everybody. In the MD&A, there's some good information on the Kintyre project, and I just wanted to ask, when exactly in 2012 do you expect to release the pre-feasibility study?
I believe we've noted Q2 for release or at least finalization of the pre-feas study. We're waiting for it. We'll take a good hard look at it internally. That finalization of that pre-feasibility is a stage gate event in our portfolio management or project management process. So we'll take a good hard look at that when it comes. So I believe toward the end of Q2 is when we're preparing for that.
Okay, and we can also expect the updated Cigar Lake technical report to come out at the end of this month as well, right?
That's correct.
All right, and finally, more of a macro question. With the HEU agreement expiring next year, come 2014, would it be safe to assume that all this material will be removed from the market? Could you provide more color than what you've already given in the MD&A on what you expect to happen post-2013?
Sure. So today there's about 24 million pounds that's put on the market thanks to the HEU agreement. And we've heard directly from the Russians, and we see no evidence otherwise, that that material will be not available. It just won't be there any longer. So that's 24 million pounds that's going to be removed from the supply side of the uranium market starting in 2014.
Okay, that answers a lot of my questions. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Greg Barnes of TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Tim, you provided some disclosure around growth capital in 2014 of $250 to $275 million. And you talk about early stage projects coming in to the mix for the W. Which projects specifically are you beginning to slot into that time frame in terms of CapEx spend?
Yeah, it's a number of projects that we're starting to spend on. I think I'm going to ask Grant. Grant's got the details on that growth capital spend, and he can detail some of the projects for you, Greg.
Yeah, as you go through the list, the growth capital starts to ramp up, for example, with Millennium, the Millennium project, as we advance that a bit. USISR, you see a contribution there in the growth capital, and the plan there is for more well field development and plus some revitalization of the Highland Mill there. And you also see continued development at Inkai to prepare for our future production plan. So those kind of capture the big pieces that are in the W plant from a capital point of view.
So Kintyre isn't coming in?
Kintyre is not on that capital spending chart, no.
Okay. And Millennium, is that more feasibility study?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, just understanding that deposit better.
Okay. Just one other question, Tim, if you could. You said you'd accepted some deferrals of contracted deliveries from some customers. What did you do with the other ones that you didn't accept the deferrals on?
So we accepted some deferrals from our customers, certain customers in the countries I think we mentioned. We were able to place those pounds back onto the market, in fact, at higher prices, so it turned out okay for us in 2011.
But the ones you didn't defer or didn't allow defer, what did they do?
I'm not sure we didn't allow any deferrals. There's some probably still under negotiation, but, in the cases of our good customers that asked us for deferrals, we allowed that.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you. The next question is from Daniel Rohr of the Morningstar. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I had a question first on uranium production costs. You noted in the 2012 outlook that you expect unit costs of sales, including DD&A and purchase volumes, to increase anywhere from 0 to 5%. I'm curious as to how you see unit cash costs of production trending on the back of the 9% increase that we saw in 2011.
Yep, I'll ask Grant to give some detail on that.
Yeah, the outlook that you see is absolutely right. We're suggesting an increase of 0 to 5%. There's no magic in that number. I mean, those are costs that are distributed across of course, labor, production supplies, contracted services. And so we just expect the cash cost to track at in the same range.
Excellent, excellent. And then I expect we'll see details in the new technical report, but were there changes to the Cigar Lake ramp-up plan? I noticed you took 2013 volume expectations down from 1 million pounds to 300,000 pounds, and then there were some minor adjustments to the 2014 and 2015 outlooks as well.
Yeah, there were some slight changes to production in 2013. Let me first reiterate, I can tell you we're delighted with the way the project's going. The team's doing a good job there, but we've announced now, I think, 300,000 pounds produced in 2013 versus, I believe, we had 1 million before. And
yeah.
That has mostly to do with our better understanding of the geology and the ore body, some lower ore grades in the initial mining panels. So we'll clearly make that up as we go along, but in that first year, that's what we're looking at.
Excellent. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from Borden Putman of Mione Capital. Please go ahead. Mr. Putman, your line is now open. Please proceed with your question.
I'm sorry. I thought I was talking. Anyway, good morning, Tim. It's Borden. I was asking a question about the initial startup at Cigar Lake. Can you give us a little more color on what's changed there with the anticipated lower grades in the initial mining panels, as you put in the press release? Thanks.
Sure. Thank you, Borden. I'll ask Bob Steen, our chief operating officer, to give some detail on the new technical report.
Borden, Bob Steen here. Just as we've gone through and gathering more information, particularly from all the surface freeze hole drilling we've been doing, and it's giving us much more detailed information into the ore, particularly those first panels and the first ore to be mined. We're seeing some slightly different grades than we had anticipated in the very first production. So that's in the first few years. That's impacting the production that we will get. The startup is given what we knew before in 2010 when we were looking at it. We just entered the mine. And now the remediation is complete, and we've got the shaft 2 through, and that was a little more struggle than we thought. Better insight into it has shifted the startup date by a few months, but overall, pretty much confirmed really where we thought we were, and it's just some small adjustments on the starting and then the initial ramp up.
Thanks, Bob. I appreciate that, and I'll look forward to reading the updated report when it comes out in February. One more question, if I could, either to you or to Tim. Looking at the Zone 4 Upper, I know there's been some changes in the production schedule for MacArthur, different from when the last technical report was available for there. I believe that was published in 2009. My model had that coming in about 2013, but I know there has been some slippage since then. So is this now coming in 2014? Is that a little bit later than you had recently thought, or has it been on track with the revised?
Bob?
Yeah, it's pretty much on track. We always have some adjustments, whether we've been more successful at some of the lower zones and the evolution of going to upper zone 4. But overall, I'd say we're very much on track with the MacArthur development.
All right, thanks.
Thanks, Borden.
Thank you. Once again, if you have a question, please press star 1 at this time. Our next question is from Lisa Mrazek of Sun News. Please go ahead.
Okay, thank you very much. Premier Brad Wall of Saskatchewan held a scrum yesterday and basically said that Canadian uranium is Saskatchewan uranium. So can you comment a little bit on the effects that it will have on the province and, I guess, just across Canada as well?
I'm sorry, what was his quote, did you say? Sorry?
Oh, he was just saying that he wanted to be clear that any uranium coming from Canada is actually coming from Saskatchewan, like Yellow Cake, for example.
Yeah, absolutely. Sorry, I understand, absolutely. It's because this is the only source of production in the country right now is coming out of northern Saskatchewan. So, indeed, the Canadian production that the Prime Minister has been talking about over here, over in China, is indeed the Saskatchewan production. And so both the Prime Minister and Premier Wall have been very instrumental, very supportive in helping move the nuclear cooperation agreement with China along, and so that has led to the protocol agreement that was signed yesterday between the Chinese and Prime Minister Harper. So, yes, indeed, he's right. Canadian uranium is right now Saskatchewan uranium.
Okay. Perfect. I think that answers it. So do you believe then that Saskatchewan will be able to keep up with the demand?
Well, you know, it remains, I'd like to say it's not a competitive market, but it's a very competitive market. And certainly there are other producers, other countries that are in competition with Canada to sell uranium, not just into China, but around the world. So, yeah, it's exciting times in China. You know, we see the growth here. It's very strong. There's, I believe, 26 nuclear reactors under construction today as we speak in China. And so that gets us excited because we know that they need uranium to fuel those reactors into the future. And so, of course, that's the fundamental base for our double U strategy, where we're investing money in our projects to build up our production so that we can supply that uranium. So that's how the circle goes on that, and that's what gives us confidence in the long-term fundamentals of the market.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from Greg Barnes of TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Just coming back, Ken or Tim, what do you think is going to happen in 2014 post-HEU when that 24 million pounds disappears? How is the market going to adjust for about, what, 12-13% of supply effectively not being there anymore?
Well, Ken and I may have different views on this, Greg, but you know, I think that's just going to confirm some of the tightness in the market. That supply has to come from somewhere, and you know, we're trying to increase our production. We're moving ahead on Cigar Lake, and we're moving ahead in the U.S., and we're moving ahead in Kazakhstan to try and increase our production to fill that gap, and I'm sure there are other producers that are trying to do the same, but that's, you know, that is could be one of those catalysts that everyone talks about that will really spur things forward. So, you know, we as I say, what we're seeing is that that's going to create an opportunity for Cameco, and that's why we're trying to get our production up the curve. So, Ken, I don't know if you have any other thoughts on that.
No, I agree fully, Tim. I think the one thing I would add is utilities are well covered today through 2016 and maybe a little bit beyond. So in terms of uncovered requirements, it's probably not going to see a huge impact, but just as Tim said, where we will see it, I think, is recognition that there's tightness in the market, recognition that even today in this price environment we see new projects announcements from Areva and BHP on Yeelirrie that they're not going to go forward in this price environment. And as Tim said in his opening remarks, it takes time to bring these opportunities into production. And so I just think we'll feel the effects of that tightness. Will reactors stop running? Absolutely not. There are inventories that have been built. But, no, it'll just highlight how we need new primary production in this market.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you. Once again, if you have a question, please press star 1 at this time. Our next question is from Todd Capella of Addenda Capital. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. I just had a quick tax question. I was wondering if you could remind us why the tax rate is so low and you're guiding for that to continue the next few years. I'm just curious if you could walk us through that again and at what point we should start to look for a more normalized tax rate of, say, 25 to 30%.
Yeah, thanks. I'll ask our CFO, Grant Isaac, to answer that, please.
Yeah, thank you very much. That's a common question that we get, and it's just a reminder that our organizational structure is set up where our costs are predominantly incurred in Canada. We talked about the Saskatchewan production. That is Canadian production. Of course, that's a higher tax jurisdiction. But from a sales point of view, our customers are all over the world, and so we set up our sales network in order to gain as much efficiency as we can. So our revenues are incurred in lower tax jurisdictions on a consolidated basis. We see a lower number there, and of course, with respect to the guidance, we are guiding for a recovery again as we offset the tax pools in Canada with taxes paid where we sell the product. So, looking ahead, we expect the situation to continue for the next few years. The tax rate will eventually increase as we increase our production in Canada, and certainly as we renew our transfer pricing agreements with our subsidiaries. But at the moment, our expectation is that guidance is good.
Okay, and then so if we were to look out 4 or 5 years, would it be fair to assume that a tax rate of 25% to 30% is realistic?
Well, we don't go out that far. We sort of just guide over the next couple of years, but at the moment, our expectation is that our structure will result in that type of consolidated tax rate, and of course, we will give good notice to the market should our expectation change.
Okay, thanks. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from Brian MacArthur of UBS. Please go ahead.
Good morning. I just wanted to follow up a little bit on Greg's question. You know, obviously HEU goes out, you know, structurally you're short 24 million pounds, assuming, you know, all sorts of assays and everything else. But do you think there's any probability, the Russians always talk about no more HEU, but what about LEU they may have to substitute into that equation going forward?
Well, Brian, I'll just say that we're not aware of anything like that. We heard Kirienko come to Toronto some time ago and say no more HEU, didn't mention LEU at all. We know they're selling some SWU into the U.S. market, but as far as we know, no HEU, no LEU. And so that's what we're now taking into account in our projections. I would say even a couple of years ago, we thought, well, there might be a chance that maybe they won't bring the same amount that they've been bringing. They might bring half. And we kept looking at that for some period of time. But even now, we say, no, as far as we can see, it's finished. And as we get closer now, it's next year, that just confirms our view. So not that we're aware of, Brian.
And maybe just on a different topic, at MacArthur, obviously, we've had a second year of very good production there. Where do we stand on the catch-up, if I want to call it that, that obviously you could overproduce above the 13.1, and you did 13.8 or 9 the last 2 years. And if I remember, that's 800 for 2 years, and there was a carry forward or whatever. Where do we stand on that? Do you still have the flexibility to run it up to that level and sell it, or are we getting near the end of that catch-up, or has anything changed?
Yeah, that's a good question, Brian, and I'll get Bob to confirm the exact numbers. I think we were about 5.2 million pounds when we started, and we would be about halfway there. But, Bob, you probably have more specific numbers.
Yeah, thanks, Tim. But we've got the flexibility to continue exercising our production for the next couple of years, because that will carry us through. So to the extent that we're successful with the mining and able to get that flex, we can still push to the max for the next couple of years at MacArthur and Key.
Okay, great. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. This will conclude the questions from the telephone lines. I would now like to turn the meeting back over to Mr. Tim Gitzel for his closing remarks.
Well, thank you very much, operator, and thank you again to everyone who joined us on the call today. In closing, I'd just like to add that this has been a year of change for our industry, but we certainly remain committed to our strategy and our goals based on strong long-term fundamentals that have not changed. Most importantly, our results for 2011 show that we remain able to deliver on these goals and in a safe and responsible manner. So, thank you again for joining us today, and let me wish you a great day. Thank you.